welcome to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. In this podcast, we discuss mystical works of literature and how they relate to recovery. We hope you enjoy today's podcast episode.
Hello, this is Buddy C. Welcome to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. I may officially change the name to God of Our Misunderstanding. That really is much more the case. And getting comfortable with misunderstanding, that's what's difficult for me, or one thing that's difficult in my thinking is that I want to understand everything. And I thought what I was looking for was an understanding, but I realized what I'm looking for is being okay with not understanding. Yes, that vulnerability that comes with not understanding. I wonder if we talk about that some today. We've been talking about before we started recording about folks calling them God moments, or if you don't want to use the word God, synchronicity, those kind of things. And I do the same thing. I hope we get to talk about some of those today if we have anything that's current that's been happening for us. Oh, I want to welcome everyone. Today we have Lori and Brian and Derek and Drew so far. Good to have you guys. We'll be talking about the 46th verse of the Tao Te Ching and how it relates to recovery. If you're new to us, go to buddyc.org. Lots of good resources there, including other podcasts, a free sober meditation app, and a lot of other things there that can be some good resources for you or for maybe your sponsees, if you have sponsees in recovery, lots of stuff. What I do really is I just assemble the things that I've found help me or help those that I know in recovery. So if anyone out there has any suggestions, I'll just give you my email, info@buddyc.org. Also, too, you'll see, if you go to buddyc.org, you'll see that I've wrote an interpretation of the Tao Te Ching, how it relates to me and my recovery back at the first of the pandemic. And I'll be happy to send you a PDF of that book if you email me at info@buddyc.org. And also you can buy a hard copy at Amazon as well. I do have a lady, synchronicity. I'll tell the story probably in the podcast that is going to translate into Spanish for us. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm doing my final edits. And once I'm finished with that, then I'm going to turn that over to her. And also, for everyone that listens, I'm wanting to translate into Mandarin and French and Russian. And I cover most of the world with those languages from what I understand. So if you are in recovery and your primary language, your native tongue, so to speak, would be Russian, Mandarin, or French, please email me at info@buddyc.org if you would like, and I'll pay for the job, if you would like to work with us translating those into your native tongue. But I really want folks that are in recovery that practice recovery and that study Zen and study the Tao Te Ching, and that this Taoist way of approaching recovery, that it resonates with you. Because when I first heard those things, I was like, oh, yes, that makes perfect sense to me. When the student's ready, the teacher appears. Yes, I understand that. When I'm ready, I draw the teacher that I need. When I step out of the way and allow life to flow, things fall into place. Yes, I can see that. That's how it seems to work for me. It just confirms this Taoist thought and Taoist approach is really more of an approach of stepping out of the way and letting life happen rather than thinking I have to believe or work or strive to make life happen. That's been my experience, and such an overall easier way to live, much less stress involved, but learning how to practice that day in and day out, alcohol for me was just the doorway in to starting to see how all of these things can work in our life. All these principles can work in our life the same way they've worked for our addiction. And we're all, everyone that attends this meeting has a lot have different addictions rather than alcoholism. So I'm just grateful for you guys. Thank you. Because there's a lot of parts of this that I would not study if it was just left up to me and I was just studying on my own. When we meet, this is the great thing about meetings. If you're in a 12-step or any recovery group, that one of the great positives from meetings is that we can resonate from others' recovery experience. I get so much out of what others share and how others are working this program, or this program is being AA for me, working the program of AA. And that program looks different for everyone. So I'm sorry, I've been in a silent retreat and I haven't been able to speak. So I'm just bubbling over this morning. Sorry, guys. We'll get on to the verse. Okay, verse 46 today. Let's start, Drew. You want to read us Stephen Mitchell?
When a country is in harmony with the Tao, the factories make trucks and tractors. When a country goes counter to the Tao, warheads are stockpiled outside the cities. There is no greater illusion than fear, no greater wrong than preparing to defend yourself, no greater misfortune than having an enemy. Whoever can see through all fear will always be safe.
Thank you, Drew. Brian, you want to read us Derek Lynn?
Yeah, sure. Verse 46. When the world has the Tao, fast horses are retired to fertilize the grounds. When the world lacks the Tao, war horses must give birth on the battlefield. There is no crime greater than greed, no disaster greater than discontentment, no fault greater than adverse. Thus, the satisfaction of contentment is the lasting satisfaction.
Thank you, Brian. And Laurie, I believe you're going to read us Jonathan Starr, correct?
Yep. When the Tao is present in the empire, men follow their own nature and riding horses work the fields. When Tao is absent from the empire, men go astray and war horses breed on sacred ground. There is no greater loss than losing the Tao. No greater curse than desire, no greater tragedy than discontentment, no greater fault than selfishness. Contentment alone is enough. Indeed, the bliss of eternity can be found in your contentment. Nice.
I would not have thought that everything I was looking for was found in contentment. I would have thought some other words. If you would have gave me that sentence and said, the bliss of eternity is found in your blank, I would never have filled it with contentment. Right now, even before we read this, I'd probably say, oh, it's found in your surrender. That's where it's found, or your acceptance. But the contentment's the result of those things, right? It's the evidence. The contentment's the evidence that I have surrendered, that I'm in a place of acceptance. Any comments before we begin? We'll just start with the first stanza and read through. Any opening thoughts? Let's start. Let's just use Stephen Mitchell for our outline. When a country is in harmony with the Tao. Let's stop there first. In harmony, others say, has the Tao, or the Tao is present. What does that mean? Let's just start with what, let's just take it slow and see if we can't, because that's so important to know, how is the Tao present? Or if you want to say God, how is God present? How is love present? How is this nature present in our life? How does that happen? If it's not present, how do we work to allow it to be present, I guess would be a way to say it. Brian?
Buddy, for me, that's when I'm in a place of no real expectations.
Yes.
And accepting life on life's terms. I've got a little quirky thing that I do with my wife in the morning that I would go to leave and she'd say, I hope you have a good day. And I told her, I said, I don't want a good day. I said, I want a day filled with peace and contentment and accepting. I don't want to label, because I'm quick to label if it's Brian's way that it was good. And if it's not, it was bad.
Yes.
And sometimes she'll say that. She'll say, I hope your day is peaceful and content.
Thank you, Brian. Anyone else? Drew?
Yeah. For me, getting into that mindset of having the Tao present in my life is much easier for me if I'm in the habit of noticing my thoughts, because it's the thought loops I get caught up in, the negative thought loops, selfish thought loops, resentful thought loops, those sorts of things. Those are the ones that take me out of harmony and into disharmony. If I get caught up in those, then I start blaming other people, resenting other people, thinking that my life would be better if other people did these things. And that just gets me mentally isolated or physically isolated and just spiraling down. In isolation, loneliness, that's when I'm more apt to have cravings or actually relapse, those sorts of things. If I can keep not necessarily keep my mind on my thoughts, but just be aware of how I'm thinking throughout the day, what's my mind filled with, what am I fertilizing the soil in my mind with? Is it poison or is it something that's actually beneficial, going to let good things grow? And that's what meditation helps me with. If I can maintain a good meditation practice, then that helps me throughout the day be more aware of what I'm thinking and allow me to notice the thoughts, not judge them, not judge myself, just to say, hey, I'm having these thoughts right now. I need to let those go and allow them to just go, so that I can either just be present in the moment or put my mind to a better use.
Thank you, Drew. Lori?
Similar to what Brian and Drew said, being in the moment. And then what I find helpful is one of Eckhart Tolle's things, accept, enjoy, enthuse. I say AE squared. So the key, and I just put it, I was about ready to post it in the chat and now it's totally perfect. Isn't that awesome? I came across an acronym this week called SODA. Stop, observe, detach, awaken. And I would add on the end a C for choose or choice or action or something like that. But how funny, isn't that funny? I hadn't hit enter yet. That's a method for me for maintaining or at least creating, choosing calm and serenity is not expecting. And then not wanting to change the moment because it's not worth, you can't really, and not trying to manipulate it into something you want or you think you want, but just to be, accept, enjoy, enthuse. I like that.
We can change our upcoming moments, right? We can't change this one because it's like that film strip. If you take the old film strip and look at it, it's just one little frame at a time, all put together, create the film. So I think it's the same way with the moment. Each moment's one of those pieces of the film strip, one of the frames. And coming back to the moment really for me is the key to that, and learning how to be more present in the moment without the desire to change the moment, even though you may say this is unacceptable, and it can be. a lot of times I feel the moment's not what I want the moment to be, but for me to, even before I can change something that's within my grasp or power to change, it helps for me to accept it as it is first. Then if there's something I can change, then look into those things. But if I can come at it from a place of peace and acceptance, then I may can see what I can actually do or what my part is. I liked in Jonathan Starr where it said that when the Tao is present in the empire, the result of that is that men follow their own nature. So is our nature to live a life of love, which is the way I see God, Tao as being is love. And I think most practices point to love as being what is present, what that something is. I've been away with my Buddhist friends, and the guy that I think of as my teacher, his opening statement was, there's something that brought us together for this retreat. But I bet if I asked him, is there a God? He's going to say no. But there's something. It's such a gift to get away from all the titles and allow everyone to approach this something on their own terms, using their own words, and not to make them conform in some way or try to conform into what our thinking is. A lot of folks come into recovery and have a problem with the God word, and they see God in the steps, and it just throws them a loop, but they're suffering so much, or this is for me too. I was suffering so much, it didn't matter what they said, I would listen because I did not have a solution that worked, because I had tried everything and tried two or three times with everything, and nothing worked that I could come up with. Lori?
I'm skeptical of our own nature, but in the big book it says, and one of the things I noticed when I'm not in the Tao, when I'm not in love mm-hmm. with life, I'm irritable, restless, and discontent. And that's my cue, right? So at least now I can stop and notice that and say, what's that about? And maybe even though we've been raised in a way that kind of perpetuates that attitude or that whatever mindset, it's not necessary. It's not our nature. So I just thought about that when you said that.
Thanks, Lori. And the reason I think it's our nature to love is because when I'm at peace, when I'm at my fullest, I don't want to go out and kill anyone. I don't automatically say, who can I do harm to? No, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. So that tells me that I can see that as being our nature. Our nature, I think, is to walk in love. Derek, good to have you today, sir. By the way, glad you could make it today.
Thanks, buddy. And I'm glad to hear you had a good Buddhist retreat.
Thank you.
That explains why your phone wasn't answering.
Yes, it was.
I'm just kidding. What Lori was just talking about made me think of that spiritual axiom, which I had to look up because I know it's somewhere. I thought it was in the big book. Apparently, it's in the 12 and 12. But when we're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with us. But that's not intuitive for me. When I'm disturbed, it's always outward focused. And it doesn't feel good. That's the other thing is, and when I'm disturbed, when I'm angry or resentful or just sitting in a meeting, like thinking this person's trying to take over the whole organization or something like that, God, it feels terrible. And yeah, like that first sentence, I don't know if we're still talking about that. It's about acceptance for me. So what if they're trying to take over the world, or whatever? If I can be there, it just feels better. Doesn't feel like I need to get my guns and or prepare myself for battle or whatever. And maybe I can make trucks and tractors instead.
Yes.
I guess be productive. Maybe that's what it's saying.
Stop the fight, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or don't even prepare to fight. Stop the preparation for
even fight. Better. Yeah. Maybe use that energy somewhere else or just enjoy the moment.
Yes.
It'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Derek. Drew?
You know, all of this about just accepting everything and not preparing to fight and just letting things be without trying to change them reminds me of, I traveled last week for a full week with my parents, and like everybody's parents, they do things all the time that annoy me, irritate me, all that. That phrase about it's easy for parents to push your buttons because they're the ones who installed them, that sort of thing. And on trips in the past, or just hanging out with them for a day, they do the same things they've always done that annoyed me, irritated me, disturbed me, those sorts of things. And I'd eventually snap at them or go off by myself or just stew about how they need to change and why do they do this? Why do they do that? Why don't they do this? But this past trip, I really made a conscious effort of just allowing them to do what they do and not do what they don't do. They still did the same things that used to get me irritated, get me agitated, get me, you know, riled up and snapping at them. But I was way more at ease this whole trip, just letting them do their thing. And it was probably the most pleasant trip I've had with them. I never really felt the need to get away from them or correct them on anything, get defensive, get aggressive, like the rest of this verse says. And that was just so much more enjoyable for everybody. Just accepting everybody as they are and hoping they accept me as I am, which I know they do. That just makes life so much more comfortable, more at ease with everybody, ease with myself. I'm not snapping at them and then feeling really ashamed, feeling regretful. It's just a way more pleasant to live. I really enjoy it.
Thank you, Drew. That phrase that from what Derek read about the spiritual axiom, that when I'm aggravated in some way, there's something wrong with us. There's something wrong with me. That's not a negative. That's a positive. And the reason is, that's a good thing that it's something wrong with me. Because if it was something wrong with them, I can't change them. I can't surrender them. I can only surrender me. So that means for every one of my disturbances, there is a solution. I don't have to live in disturbance. It's not necessary. It's more of that idea of returning to our own nature, right? Our original nature, which I think that's what all of recovery is about. At least for me anyway, is returning to a nature that does not require me to escape. A nature that I can be content and happy with, peaceful with, without thinking I need to physically change me in some way or alter my attitude or escape from. Escape for me is the best word to use. Now we're going to look at some outward signs of us either being in harmony with the Tao, with our true nature, our original nature, or not being, or as some of these translations say, when the Tao is absent. When a country goes counter to the Tao, okay, countries in harmony, factories make trucks and tractors. Okay, let's break this down instead of talking about corporately. Let's talk about this personally. Let me read the whole phrase. When a country's in harmony with the Tao, the factories make trucks and tractors. When a country goes counter to the Tao, warheads are stockpiled outside the cities. When Buddy is in harmony with the Tao, I am producing things of value in my life and in others' lives. When I am not in harmony, when I am working counter to the Tao, I am preparing to defend myself. I am thinking all the time about the other shoe dropping. I think most folks know what I mean by that. If you're listening outside the U.S., you may not. What I'm talking about is things are going so well, I'm just waiting for the bad thing to come about, the other shoe to drop, so to speak. Brian?
Made the comment when Buddy is in the Tao, thinking when Brian is in the Tao, he's able to love people where they are.
Yes.
And not provide feedback of way Brian thinks that they should be or solve their problems.
So when you provide feedback, you're not really wanting to, that's not for their good. That's for your good, right?
Yeah.
So they won't bother you anymore.
Yeah. I used to be quite a shoulder. I would say, well, what you should, or you ought.
Yes.
Buddy probably understands that. I don't know if anybody else understand the what you ought to do. I don't even know how to spell ought. I guess it's A-U-T.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Brian. Yeah, and all those actions we took were not, or speak for me, I may have shrouded that in me being helpful or me trying to do something good for them. But what in reality I was doing was I was only trying to fix them because they were aggravating me. They weren't doing it the way I thought it should be done.
And it's fear-based.
Yes. Yes. And most of the time it's the fear for me, the fear that they may, I have this imposter feeling at times that if they knew how I really felt. Yes. So I can look in my own life and see, am I preparing to fight? Am I thinking that it's up to me to protect and defend myself? Am I in fear? Is all of this because I'm afraid that this is going to stop working, or things are good right now? What if they turn? What am I going to do? What? And I go into all that mental tailspin.
Yeah, you guys, you got me thinking about the idea that sometimes I'm looking at somebody and the first one that comes to mind is my son, just because that's a lot of what's going on lately for me, but and thinking I could say nothing. Or I could tell him, I think you should do this because it will be good for you. But what you were just talking about made me think about, why do I think that? What's the reason behind the reason? And behind that reason, I don't know how many layers deep this damn thing is, but it's fear. I can tell you that. And it's not, on the surface, I'm like, I'm telling him we need to go outside and get some fresh air. That seems like such an innocuous thing, but I'll be damned if it doesn't cause the most conflict in my life. I'm like, but this is a good thing. But there's this fear thing, right? What's behind the reason for me, if I'm really being honest, is if he's not healthy, what does that say about me as a dad? You know what I mean? And that's a fear. And it's not really, because if I didn't say anything, he's probably going to figure it out on his own. Like, he'll go out when he needs to go out. He'll do what he needs to do. But for some reason, I think I got to control. I'll get in these points in my life where I think, okay, surely this is where I'm in control, where I'm the authority in this case. And I'm continually proven wrong, actually. So, all right, that's all we got.
Thank you, Derek. What a gift when we can start being more aware of ourselves. I never was aware of these things prior to recovery. And we're just now starting to scratch the surface. I am nowhere near in my life seeing as a whole what my true motivations are. I'm starting to see them, and I see glimpses at times. But what a gift to start seeing life a little clearer and being able to surrender those fears that are behind what's going on. And if we're talking about defense in our own life, there's a point of surrender that we've got to come to before we can even start talking about what we should defend, where we should not surrender, so to speak, or where we should take action and where we shouldn't. For me, all of that has to come from a place of surrender. All of that does. I have to get to the point where I stop the fight. Now, the next phrase, this is a big one. There's no greater illusion than fear. No greater wrong than preparing to defend yourself. No greater misfortune than having an enemy. Now, I'm not talking about, I don't think here he's talking about fear as in, oh, that snake will bite you, so you shouldn't go over to it, or a fear of stepping out in the road. People call those things, and I'm doing quotations, healthy fears. I would prefer not to even use the word fear for those things, just so in my mind I can keep it a little more separate. That's just respect. I respect cars enough to look before I step in the road. Yes, instinct. That's good, Lori. Thank you. That's different from these unreasonable fears that I carry with me that control my life. I'm not talking about those things that we respect, those things that physically can harm us. I'm talking about those things that either I've made up in my head, which most of it's made up. It's not even real. The majority of it's not real. But all those things that bind me, really, that control my life. When I first started noticing this, and I can still catch myself, how much of my day do I make effort? Do I take actions so that I can look good in front of other people or try to? A huge amount of actions, effort during my day, if I'm not careful, can be preparation. And that is a form of preparing to fight, even when you think about it, that I'm pacifying a fear. I'm pacifying a fear. That's the illusion. No greater wrong than prepare. It didn't say defending yourself, but preparing to defend yourself. We're not even talking about defending. We're talking about getting ready to defend. That's where my mental energy's taken up. If it's just one action, okay, that's not as much all-consuming. The all-consuming part is all the preparation, all that mental energy that I can spend hours thinking, what if they say this? What about this? And I can see this whole stream of thought and get wrapped up in all of this that majority of the time doesn't even come about. For me, that's the entertaining of the fear. What do you think he means with no greater misfortune than having an enemy? Do we have to have enemies? Do we have to have fear? Do we have to prepare to defend ourselves? Lori?
Eckhart Tolle, and I don't know if it's one of his podcasts or the book. And by the way, I found the Book of Newer so much easier to grasp for myself than The Power of Now. And anyway, he talks about that's another way to identify when you're out of the moment. As soon as there's an enemy, you're out of the present moment. You're fighting against something. You're reacting, defending, engaging. And once again, that's like a little cue. Oh, that politician, that law, that car, that person driving the car, whatever. There, as soon as it flips to being an enemy, something you have to fight against or defend against, then what is your counter to the Tao? Yeah, so that's what came up, because that's where I've heard the word enemy recently. And it's, oh, I get that. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Lori. Oh, by the way, we do a multi-day retreat, usually starting on Wednesday night, going through Sunday, or starting Thursday night. I think we're going to continue Wednesday night through Sunday in Hayesville, North Carolina. We do this the third weekend of April and the third weekend of October every year. If any of you are interested, it's very reasonably priced. Just email me at info@buddyc.org and I'll get you information on how to register. Love to have you. But there's a place that I come to in the retreat where I stop fighting my thoughts. Oh, the Eckhart Tolle books, A New Earth, that you were talking about. Thank you, Lord. As a matter of fact, I'm making a note to put that book in our bookstore at buddyc.org under resources. But there's a place that I've come to every time, and this is my fifth or sixth multi-day retreat. And they're not all strict too about how you sit or all those things. It's just silent. And so you can meditate any way that works for you. But there's a place you come to where you stop fighting your thoughts. During the whole process, your mind's going, or mine does, a million miles a second. And that starts dwindling. And if you meditate on a regular basis, you'll know what I'm talking about. But having that start to dwindle is, I think, the point for me for a multi-day retreat. And the way it dwindles for me is to stop fighting it. I just let those thoughts go. Okay, wherever you want to go, I will go today, right now. And what I found was when I stopped fighting them, they diminish. And I had one retreat, I think last year before last. This happened the entire retreat to the point to where I would start on one of these and it was almost like a dream, but I was awake and it would just go and go. And the whole time I was saying to myself, I need to stop this. And I'd keep coming back to my breath and coming back to the moment. I was fighting it. It's what I was doing. And then it would do it again. And I would fight and this constant struggle through the, that part only become aware of that on a day or so in, but the rest of the retreat, I was just fighting this. And the very last 30-minute session, we do 25 minutes sitting and then 5 minutes walking, 25-5, like that. The very last 30-minute session after multiple days of 8-9 hours a day, so lots of 30-minute sessions. So the very last one, we sat down to start it. And my mind started doing the same thing. And I wanted to fight it and keep coming back to the breath, so forth and so on. And I did the opposite. I said, okay, wherever you want to go, I will go. I said this to my mind while I was sitting there internally. I said, wherever you want to go, let's go. I'm not going to stop you. And it immediately just left like that. Immediately. I was like, so all I had to do this whole time was stop fighting it. And I sat there the last 30 minutes. The best description I know of is like watching a beautiful sunset and you're just sitting there and all just enjoying it. It was like that for the last 30 minutes. And all it took was for me to stop fighting it. And I think there's an element of that in this reading, in that when we're preparing, we're already fighting. We're already gone. And the reason that is so important is all of that's taking us out of the moment. We can't, if we're off preparing to fight, we're not able to see what's there in front of us, to how we can be useful, or because we can only be useful in the moment. All those things take me out of the moment. Our fear, this illusion of fear, And that's what Stephen Mitchell says, no greater illusion. He didn't say there's nothing greater than fear. It's the illusion of fear, because fear is an illusion. All of that fear is an illusion. Doesn't mean things we don't need to change. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the fear of those things is an illusion. Isn't that what gives me the most angst anyway? It's not the issue itself. It's my fear of the issue that gives me the most trouble. I don't have to have enemies. And that's why it's the greatest misfortune. Nothing greater than having something to fight against. Whoever can see through all fear will always be safe. The tools of the program are what helped me to see through the fear. But like Derek, like you were saying, unless I am aware of the fear, how can I see through it? And seeing through fear would be I stop fighting the fear. I can see through it. Maybe it's like that curtain. I can just see through it. A see-through kind of curtain where if I can just see through that, the curtain's not an issue, is it? Derek?
Yeah, that's interesting. That fear is actually not a real thing. Like, it's just a feeling. But it feels so real, right?
Yes, yes.
But it's just a feeling.
Yeah.
Or an emotion, or it's this, concept we create. If this happens, then this happens, and that happens. And I could be down the road 1,000 miles already where this bad thing, okay, now I've broken my leg and I'm in a hospital. I can like really see myself in the hospital, but that's not real. It's like the magic magnifying mind we have. As I heard at an AA meeting once, and I was just like, dang, that really hits home, because so much of my life is like spent looking through this like weird magnifying thing where I'm like either hopeful about the future or worried about it. But I'm never like, what if I put that thing down? I don't know. And just go, okay, what's here now? I don't know, Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now. Again, like that's that whole book there. That's all he's talking about, it seems. And I know there's a lot of different aspects to that, but anyways, getting off track here.
It's all on track, Derek. It's all there, my friend. Yeah. Well, have you ever experienced a fear that was real in the way that we're talking here?
I was thinking about, what if you do break your leg? In that moment, that's maybe you had a fear about it, and then you do break your leg. That's not the fear itself, though, right?
Exactly.
I'm actually asking you that.
But that's it, though. Is that
the fear realized, though, is what I'm trying to get at?
It could be, but the breaking of the leg is different from the fear of breaking the leg, because it's the fear just swirling around in our head. Actually, my fear of, if I'm doing something, I'm afraid I'm going to break my leg, whatever I'm doing. If I have enough of the fear, it could actually cause me harm. It could actually contribute to me breaking my leg. Brian?
Man, I was just thinking what some of y'all said about if you've got this fear. Like for me, I grew up in fear, and I grew up and I wasn't safe. And one of my dad's famous quotes was, one of these days, everything's going to go to shit. And so that, yeah. But, you know, that left me in a ton of fear and not being able to trust people. The first thing that I formed when I was little was, if I let you in, you can hurt me. Mm. And so, anyway, fast forward, I had this issue, and I'll be quick. I had an issue with a neighbor, and man, I really took about 3 months to sit with this situation. And finally I confronted him, and it was just, it's absurd what he thought was okay. He's basically doing something that was affecting my property. And And he agreed to it, but he also agreed that he wasn't going to change it. And so I had to turn him over to the state, and I had to let them deal with it. And so I had a lot of energy around that, because it was like, now I'm not, even though I live on acreage, but now I'm not safe at home. And so anyway, we fast forward, the state takes care of it. And I thought, I did the right thing. Maybe this guy's going to come over and say, hey, man, I was being an ass. Because I made it very clear to him before I did that, that I didn't want to be at odds with him because he was my neighbor. And anyway, of course, that didn't happen. A few months later, I find out that he's done a retaliatory strike against me. And I was like, here I am. Here I am. People can't be trusted. Even though I don't hang out with this guy, there's now there's that tension. And that's bothered me. It still to this day bothers me.
Because Brian, tension's in your head, though.
It is. It is. The other day, him and his wife were walking by, and my little dog, Lily, she's outside and got a big front yard, and she sees them barking, takes off after them. I'm like, it can't be any other way. But it's, I swear she knows. But yeah, that tension, man, that tension is difficult. And it's like, where do I let go of this? Was I right? Was I wrong? Is it even right to say, is it even correct to establish a right or wrong?
You, if it's a situation that needs correction, let's say, we've come to the conclusion it does, you can take all of those actions without the associated fear. That's the whole point, I think, is to be able to live life, make decisions without all of that fear that I used to bring into these things, which most of the time would be seen as anger or resentment in some way, when I can take the same action. And one tool that helps me with that is not taking things personally. Anyone that owned the acreage beside him, Brian, he would be doing the same thing. So he's really not doing that to you.
Yeah.
That to his neighbor or whatever.
Yeah. It's that person poking along in traffic.
Yes.
Exactly. They're not doing it to Buddy or Brian.
Exactly. For someone like that, I would have to probably pray for them on a regular basis, ask of some way that I could be helpful to them. I'd want to leave my dog out to make their walk aggravating. But in the moment, that would be an opportunity for me to bring the dog in and wave and say hello and go back in the house. I would have to make myself every time I see them to go out of my way to be friendly. That's the ways for me that I can surrender that fear, really, that, oh, they're not going, they don't like me. They don't approve of me. I want everyone to approve of me. I don't care who they are, how much I dislike them. I still want them to approve of what I do. That's crazy. That's crazy. Seeing through fear. Until I surrender, I can't see through fear. Not at all. This whole process for me has to start with the culmination of the first three steps in recovery, in AA anyway. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. If I had that situation, Brian, I am powerless over my neighbor. I cannot manage my relationship with my neighbor. I don't have that power to do that, that ability. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. The way I would see that, I know that my relationship with my neighbor can be restored in line with my true nature. I know that my relationship with my neighbor can be one that's governed by love and respect rather than fear and anger. And three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. For me, would mean I give you all of my desires and care of what my neighbor does. I let all those things go. If it's God that you pray to, I surrender my will in regards to my neighbor. And you can go on and on. And when I start sitting with something like that, there's amazing the things that bubble up, the affirmations and things. And I make note of those things. I'll stop and jot those down or put them in Google Keep. I'll use the voice recognition and just put those things in Google Keep. I can do that in just a second and then look at them later. And that for me is looking through fear. It's taking action regardless of how I feel or how I think. I know where these things are coming from because they're coming from the same fear, my one or two fears that everything comes from. Yeah. Anything else for that, Brian?
I was just thinking that when this guy came back with this retaliatory strike, it's what I call it, the state actually contacted me, and the guy said, we actually laughed about it. And he said, this guy's mad. And he said, it's really absurd, but he had a little thing that he asked me to do. And he said, would you be willing to do this? He says, I don't want to cause you any grief, but he said, if you do this, then you're 100% correct. And he can pound sand. And he laughed. And I said, yeah, I'll be glad to do it. And we were able to laugh about it. And I didn't pick that rope up and continue on with the anger and say, hell no, I'm not doing it.
Right.
And I felt like that was a good place to come from, to be that guy that's reasonable.
Isn't that such a better way to live, Brian, than how?
It is. Because I used to be that guy. It was like, man, I'm going to teach this SOB a lesson.
Yes.
And full disclosure, it never worked out. I was usually the one learning the lesson the hard way.
And I've learned that even in situations where I'm right, more times than not, when I defend, I make the situation worse, not better.
Yeah.
I'm better off just letting that situation go, leaving it alone if I can.
Yeah. It was really funny how it worked out. I'd been sitting with it for months, and I came back from a walk, and this neighbor was back in the corner of his property where it was. And I thought, you know what? Now's the time to rip this Band-Aid off and to have this discussion. And so it happened. But it was just funny how it worked out. I thought, I'm just going to turn this over and I'm going to let it happen on its own time frame. And it took several months. But the time came and I handled it.
What we can do too, Brian, is what I just realized was it's not only that we desire to defend, it's that we feel that there's anything to defend in the first place. Taking that a step back from,
yeah,
you know, in reality, there's nothing to defend.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we have, it's just borrowed. It's nothing we're going to take with us. Drew?
And that just reminds me of a line from the St. Francis poem, help me to understand rather than be understood. When I focus on making sure that others know that I'm right, you need to know that you're wrong and I'm right. You need to acknowledge that I'm right. You need to, I want to make sure that you see it my way. That gets me in trouble more than just understanding what the situation is, being at peace with it, accepting it. That's what, like Brian was saying, that's a much, much calmer, much more pleasant way to live.
But only then, I think, do we start having the awareness to see life unfold in front of us. And sometimes that's done with these coincidences that happen in life. And I personally think that's happening all the time for us. And I just don't see it. And then there's sometimes they're blaring right in front of my face. But if I'm tied up in all of my illusion and my head spinning all the time, I'm not going to see those things. And sometimes I think we miss direction at times that would make life so much easier, that we can't even acknowledge or see happening around us if we're all wrapped up in our fear and we're busy defending or preparing for that. What's the one from the other day? Open yourself to the Tao. Trust your natural responses and everything will fall into place. Yes. Okay. Anything else, guys? Any closing thoughts? It's been a good conversation today. All right, guys. Well, have a great week and we'll see you next week. Thank you.
Hello, this is Buddy C. I wanted to make you aware of several recovery-related resources that I've posted in the episode description. These resources include a list of recovery podcasts, a free sober meditation app, daily recovery email, shared Google recovery calendars. Hope you put some of these resources to use and have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Tao of Our Understanding Recovery Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends in recovery.